Radio,
where we became missionaries to restore the culture. An interview with the Culture Project.
So just turning now to you as missionaries, why did you choose to become a missionary?
I chose to become a missionary because of John Paul II. He invited young people to be a part of the new evangelization, and he really inspired me and truly has made me believe that and confident in that I have a part to play in the church, a hands-on role in bringing souls back to Christ and back to the church. And so when I met one of the staff members who works for the Culture Project, you know, he invited me 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, to go on mission and to bring the message of theology of the body, of human dignity, and of sexual integrity to young men across the country. And he actually told me, he's like, "I'll give you an audience of thousands of teenagers." And I'm like, "Oh, that sounds great," because I love to speak and I love to talk and to inspire as best as I can. I'm not going to say that I'm amazing at it, but I absolutely love it. And so I became a missionary because of that reason, because I was personally invited by John Paul II, because I was personally invited by another young adult who believed in the same messages and wanted to spread these messages across the country.
Well, I never would have thought that I would be a missionary. I had many, many career plans for when I finished university traveling around and speaking to young people about chastity never was a part of it. But when I was in university, I was exposed to theology of the body in a way that I had not previously been exposed to it. I had, through no one's fault but my own, I had a slightly warped view of chastity. It was a lot of rules and regulations, and myself not being quite a rule follower, I, you know, followed it loosely. But when I encountered theology of the body, I found in it a profound freedom. A freedom to view another person and see the gift that they are, and you know, you don't have to turn your eyes or heart away from appreciating the gift of another, and rather the more you do that, the more pure you can become if you are able to train yourself to see every person as gift and that they don't exist for me but simply because they are good. I found great freedom in that, and so as I was exposed more and more to theology of the body, the more I wanted to talk about it and to tell all of my friends about it and to join clubs and to promote it on my campus and post Facebook statuses and many, many things. And so as I was doing this, it was just on my heart more and more to consider making this more of a full-time thing. And so a friend mentioned to me this particular mission that they had heard about through another friend, and Katie, you've got to apply. And it rocked my world a little bit, as Australians would say, God stuffed up my plans. but I really can say it has been the most joyful, difficult, challenging, stretching, enriching experience to be able to be a herald of this message, to allow God to use me in some small way to tell his little ones that he so dearly loves how much they're worth and the great love that they are meant to have.
And for me, I was very much like Katie in the sense that I never thought or expected I would be a missionary. But also similarly to Lamar, I was really inspired by St. John Paul II. And I just couldn't help but, as I learned more about him, wonder how a man who was surrounded by darkness and death and really you would expect despair, but amidst all of that, he chose love. And he chose love in the fullest sense, in the most authentic way. He chose to love everybody he encountered like Christ. And my life was kind of radically changed when I first heard the words that he echoed, do not be afraid to be the saints of the new millennium. And I just remember hearing that quote and the reality of the fact that I was called to something more than what this culture was offering me really hit me. And it kind of set me on a trajectory that I had to give my life for something greater than myself. And I wanted to serve, and I wanted to bring the joy and the love and the peace that I had received to everybody that I encountered. And it was through a pilgrimage to Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City that I felt a very, very deep call to defend the unborn and to commit to promoting the dignity and the sanctity and the beauty of every human life. And it was on that pilgrimage that I understood for the first time the pro-life message in light of the virtue of chastity, and how the two really complemented each other and gave life to the other. And I decided to become a missionary, to commit to promoting the virtue of chastity in my attempts to defend the unborn and promote human dignity, because the two messages are really, you cannot have one without the other, because at the heart of it is loving and respecting the dignity that we have been given as sons and daughters of God. So it was really that whole journey. And then obviously I did that year of mission in America, and having this burning desire the whole time to bring this to my home. So with the culture project, that's kind of where we're at right now. It's trying to establish it in Australia and get a pulse for our culture and the needs of our church, and to really just breathe life into a culture of death. So,
what's been your best experiences so far as missionaries?
I'm honestly not being disingenuous when I say that a trip to Australia has probably been one of the best experiences as a missionary. There are a lot of highs and lows in what we do, a lot of challenges, obviously, as you can imagine. And it's far, far more blessed and more joyful than I could have guessed before I began doing this a year and a half ago. But I would have to say, I think coming to Australia in American wintertime, Australian summertime, and being embraced by the beautiful people here, and we've just had a blast. So that's probably going to take the cake for me. It's going to be hard to beat.
One of the greatest moments in my time as a missionary, I was in my home city of New Orleans in the United States. And I was with one of my teammates, and we were doing like a small tour throughout the state of Louisiana. And this one parish, this guy, had this youth minister at this parish. And when we put out the announcement that we were coming, this guy would just email me and call me several times every day, just doing whatever he could to get us into his parish. And I'm like, all right, I don't know if we'll fit into the schedule. And he's like, please, we'll do anything we need to do. Please, we'll have it any day, any night, you name it, we'll do it, we'll be there. And I'm like, okay, this is the only day we're available. And he's like, great. So he like puts it on the schedule, and it turns out that this parish actually had the highest rate of teen pregnancy in the whole state. And it was kind of out in the middle of nowhere. There weren't a lot of things for young people to do. And because of that, they would be sexually active. So I didn't know any of this until I showed up to the parish like an hour before the talk, and me and my teammate are like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? So we just kind of really, really prayed intensely. We surrendered everything to Our Lady and to our Lord. And I took the boys into this room, and we were talking about chastity and sexual integrity. And there was this one boy, and he was like joking about everything I said. He would not give me room to do anything. And I was getting so mad at this kid. And I'm like praying for this kid. I'm like, Lord, shut that kid up, please. I'm like really struggling right now. And all these other kids like are missing out. And as with many talks that I give to men, when we get to the pornography section everyone is silent. And I think the reason of that is because, on the one hand, a lot of them are struggling with this scourge of pornography. But at the same time, I think a lot of men are silent because they've never been given the chance to talk about this before. And so they're just in a kind of shock. Wow, someone actually is talking about something that I'm dealing with. And it matters. And so this one kid, he shut up. He was quiet. And I'm talking about it. I'm talking about its addictive nature. I'm talking about what it does to our vision. And I'm talking about how to overcome it. And the power and the strength and the beauty that comes from a man who has overcome pornography just one time, let alone a lifetime. Just one time is enough. And then they do it again and again and again to overcome it. And this kid raised his hand, and he was on the borderline of crying. He had like water welling up in his eyes. And he asked me, he said, "Do you really think that this is something I could overcome?" And I had, that was that moment where I had an opportunity to speak unconditional, unfiltered, raw truth to that one boy's heart, to affirm his ability to overcome something that he's been struggling with for years. And it's moments like that that make mission work like this completely, like, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to put everything that I have and everything that I am on the line, and to be embarrassed in front of a crowd, to be made fun of in front of a crowd, because there's one kid like that in every classroom that needs to be spoken to, that has not been, and that needs this message and has never been told it. And that was one defining moment in my whole time as a missionary that I'll never forget.
I don't really have like one standout moment, but I just, the answering like the call to be a missionary, it's just kind of, as Katie was saying, it's just an unparalleled joy in knowing that you're doing what the Lord has called you to do, and that he sustains you in any struggles or any doubts or fears. He takes all that away. But I think one thing that I found is the most rewarding was understanding how blessed we are to have this truth, to have this access to freedom and authentic love. And being so thankful for the grace to allow my heart to be consumed or captivated by this message, but then having the opportunity to share that. So I distinctly, like, one of the greatest things that I was able to do on a daily basis was to actually communicate this truth to a room full of girls, and then you see the change, you see their hearts soften, you see their eyes light up. And you know that they're hearing truth, and this truth is written on the heart of every human person, and we recognize truth. We have that intuition to know and to recognize truth when we hear it or when we see it. So seeing their faces light up and just you can hear the questions in their head, like, is she, like, can I trust her? Can I really believe this is true? Like, this is what I feel I was made for, but I've never heard this said to me before. I've never had my beauty affirmed in a pure and authentic way before this. And you can see them striving to believe this truth, but then you also see that seed of doubt that's there is, oh, she's, you know, this is, I've never heard this before from the culture, or this sounds great. And I think it's what I was made for, but it's not possible. That's hard to see that thought process, but it's just a testament to how wounded and fragile our culture has become. But nevertheless, it was those moments of seeing that truth transcending in someone's heart and just that beauty of recognizing that you're created for something more than what this culture is offering. So it was that daily communication of truth and receptivity.
That was part two of an interview with the Culture Project. To listen to part one of that interview, and for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.